It's like sometimes you just gotta be the crazier guy. Remember I Love You Man? When his dog like poops on the boardwalk and if people step in it, he just goes off. He's like, you have this energy inside of you, and if you unleash that energy, people will back down.
Yeah.
And the bodybuilders were just except for the one guy who stood up to him.
Yeah.
Then you just gotta run.
It's probably because Paul Rudd.
That's true. Paul Rudd. He's like a boy in a man's body.
Yeah. Stutters a lot, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. But he's awesome. I'd love to have a beer with him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he seems like one of those guys. Both of them, actually. Jason, what's the other guy's name? I know he's in, because he's in High Met Your Mother. But both those guys, I would just love, they just seem like cool, normal guys. That you have a beer with just like anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, hey, that's part of the life aspirations.
All right.
So with that...
a terrible intro.
Have you ever seen... what's the one with Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum? Where they go back to high school?
Oh, yeah, that was 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, 21 Jump Street. When they go back to high school and like everything's changed and it's like really cool to be an environmentalist and like being gay, like if you're gay, you're in the in crowd, people are like, oh man, that's awesome. Like what dudes did you sleep with this week? And everything's just like upside down world. Like all the kids that were lame.
Everybody's two strapping it. No, one strap.
two strap. Do you play an instrument? You're like awesome.
Yeah.
People think it's so cool.
How many miles to the gallon does that thing get? Psh, one's on biodiesel. What about you? What's that, get like 8 miles a gallon? Psh, more like 6. What, you like hate the environment?
I drive a Prius, man. Speaking of Priuses, because I know we're both on the Prius wavelength, the new Prius Prime, I hate to throw this in there, but it's so awesome.
Sponsored by Toyota.
It gets like 140 miles to the gallon.
Are you kidding
It's
me?
A Prius you can plug in, and it's also a hybrid.
That's ridiculous.
So you could essentially never use gas.
Is the gas tank like a teacup saucer?
I don't know how big the gas tank is, but you can literally, I think it's something outrageous. Like you can get 800 and something miles per trip without a fill up.
It's probably the standard, like, because my Prius gas tank, if it is all the way empty, I think I'm able to fit 7 gallons in there.
Oh, that's so cute.
But that's like 400, 500 miles.
That's true on a Prius,
So I'm not complaining. I don't care. And when I fill up, I'm like, oh man, how much is it going to be this time? Really ran it dry. And it's like $12.
Hey, look, the Priuses are getting more and more badass, all right? They're getting sportier. All right, I'm not going to say badass. They're getting sportier to the fact that it's okay for a dude to drive them. Like, you get a new Prius with, like, you see the lights are sloping in and they're all cut really sharp. If you get that, like, blacked out with black tint.
It's kind of like the new Beetle, though.
I don't know. Think about Marky Mark and, what was it? The Italian Job. They made Mini Coopers cool. You see Marky Mark driving a Mini Cooper and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, but that's a Mini Cooper, though. Have you ridden in a Mini Cooper?
I have. I mean, they're sporty.
They're pretty zippy.
But it looks like just a vagina mobile on the outside. I mean, you don't look at it and go, man, damn, that's a badass car.
Pick up all the chicks.
Yeah. God, that guy gets so many girls in the Mini Cooper. Do those seats fold down? It's not the first thing that goes through your mind.
That is true.
But what kind of guy do you want to be? You know?
Because
you'd be going across straight lines with the Prius. That might be more impressive than, sorry, babe, we went 80 miles. I got to fill up the old diesel truck.
Well, that was so when Sabrina and I first started dating, that's what I had.
Yeah.
I had a lifted, or not lifted, it was just a huge Ford F-250 blue truck. It was like the 7.2 diesel. Just ripped through gas.
Wow, you must hate animals.
Yeah, loud as shit. I would legitimately, if I pulled up to a drive-thru restaurant, I would have, a fast food drive-thru, I would have to turn off my truck because they thought I was revving my vehicle just to be like a dick at the drive-thru. Like, sir, could you please stop revving your vehicle? I'm not. It's just idling. I'm sorry.
From that to the Prius.
Yeah, I went from that. Yeah, well, yeah, there were a couple cars in between there, but pretty much that to a Prius.
But you're making up your environmental karma is being evenly distributed now. You were on the far other side, now you're on the far this side.
Yeah. So with that, I think we can officially kick off this next episode of Breakfast at Timothy's.
Yeah. This is Garrett.
And this is Tim. As always, we had an interesting concoction for breakfast.
Something new. Garrett, talk about environmentally friendly.
Yeah, actually, it was pretty, I guess, crunchy.
Crunchy.
Breakfast was rather crunchy.
It was organic cinnamon raisin bread. With pollinator-friendly organic almonds, you know, got to keep the bee population up.
Mm.
With raw organic honey, that you see the trend here, and organic bananas.
Mm.
All together, just smashed into a piece of bread.
Delicious.
It's actually pretty good. The honey carried it.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. Raw honey, it's pretty hard to mess up anything with raw honey.
It's hard to eat regular honey when you eat raw honey. Because raw honey tastes... It's like going from like eating like milk chocolate after you eat like, you know,
yeah,
amazing European chocolates or something.
It's got a different texture to it too.
It does.
It's not quite the same. It's, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like there are like honey granules in it.
Yeah.
And you almost chew it, but not really.
And it actually has flavor.
Yeah. It's more of like a paste than just a sweetener.
Regular honey is just like straight up just sugar. It's just sweet. Yeah,
it's pretty close. It's honey flavored simple syrup, pretty much.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. So today we are going to talk about some interesting things, some big things, like our life goals and aspirations and some principles we live by and our major beliefs in life, maybe some quotes we live by, just all of the biggest topics we could possibly think about.
Time to get inspired. Rise and grind.
Not that.
Just kidding. None of that.
Jesus. All right. So, Monsieur Garrett, do you want to start with some life goals, or shall I?
I'd kind of like to hear yours.
Okay. All right. Well, I had this one locked and loaded and ready to go because, as you know, and as we had initially established kind of early in our friendship, one of my initial big lifetime goals was to cure type 1 diabetes, right? And I was working on that. I wanted to go into like biomedical engineering, maybe get a doctorate, just research. Obviously, personally, my brother has type 1 diabetes, so that's a factor in inspiring that. And I donate to the research every year. Moving on. So that was like a focus of mine and kind of a drive of mine. And then one day you sent me a picture saying of a clip from PubMed, like, oh, by the way, we just made an artificial pancreas that's in testing starting right now. So pretty much type 1 diabetes is cured. And obviously, it's not like the stem cell research that they were looking into to kickstart the old pancreas, but this one obviously kind of approaches it in a whole new way. Just get rid of the old pancreas completely, put a whole new one in there, which essentially solves that problem. So ever since then, I have been kind of at a loss, I guess, for what my overall huge life goal is. But one thing that has been fascinating to me and has recently inspired a lot of different things is artificial intelligence.
Mm.
Right. And that it's not that I feel as though I think about the problem any differently than the geniuses that are already all working on it worldwide. It's just, it's fascinating to me. And I love questions and I love conversation and I love digging into like a why.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, so I feel like computer science and neuroscience, you would need to have both, right? In order, like, how does the brain work? And I guess, and how does behavior work? And, but also, how does programming work? And you would need to have all of that all wrapped in one, which there are several companies that have that already. But and I know this sounds silly, but it seems like the basis that everybody's come down to is you have to write a program that can learn, right? Mm, and it can, and it cannot, it doesn't just learn individual things that are already preset, but it can essentially write itself and learn more and more and more. And so that's where things get kind of tricky. So that particular field is starting to fascinate me more and more. And I think that would be one of my, I don't know, we'll call it a life goal, is to see general artificial intelligence.
Nice. It's a pretty good life goal. So where do you think from here, obviously we talked about degrees and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think education-wise you want to go? Are you still on the MD track, are you thinking-wise, or do you want
to... See, that's the tricky part. I'm going to need to look more into, in terms of specifics, where, like, what level of education you would need to get to for neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have to go to med school and then you specialize in neuroscience, or how that exactly works.
So then can
it's
I ask
kind of
you
a newer... A newer goal, I guess you could say.
Oh, yeah. I guess there's not a, you know, AI college track, so that's a little difficult.
Uh-huh.
But where does this fit into your life? Does this fit into any of your life principles in a specific way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, so one thing that continually annoys me is I think the future, obviously, is robots. We've already pretty much established that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to happen. And one thing that's been annoying me, I've bought pretty much every single program that's like, oh, this is the automated personal assistant. Like, you'll never need to do anything. You just tell it what you need it to do, and it'll do it. And every single one of them is terrible. Just, like, absolutely awful. And they'll promise, like, X, Y, and Z, and just not go through on any of them. And there is just such a difference between a physical, actual person and a program right now. And maybe there's some area where it's like super expensive. And there, like in that one super expensive thing, you've got like your actual, you can have an actual digital personal assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so, all right, where this all comes from is the movie Her.
I was literally just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you are.
Yeah. So did you see Her?
Yes.
All right. So in the movie Her, the next upgrade to essentially Siri, right, is this virtual personal assistant that learns who you are slowly over time, right? And it's kind of a general artificial intelligence. And one of the main plots in the movie is that a lot of people wind up in relationships with these people because they obviously know them so well and they're literally adapted to you specifically as a person. And so that kind of kicked this whole thing off in terms of, I feel like every human being in the future, maybe 20 to 30 years from now, is probably going to have something like that, a digital personal assistant. And I cannot imagine the productivity. Obviously, in an effective system that gets a great tool is just going to be 10 times more ineffective. But when when each individual person that wants one can have a fully autonomous virtual assistant to become who knows how many times more productive. Because if you're like, hey, research this and get something typed up and gather it all together for me in a nice, concise format, and it's not a person that's doing that, it's like a robot, holy crap. Like, it is just... The things that one person could get done are innumerable. And where this also comes into play was, and I hate bringing this up over and over again, but there's the Ender series, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is also an autonomous creature that, or an autonomous, like, it's not a robot, it's just a program.
Okay.
That assists the main characters throughout it. And once again, can do things that we can't even think of, right? Just makes connections, calculations, predictions, investments, everything. Imagine if you never had to look at the stock market because your personal assistant was constantly rebalancing your portfolio so that it was perfect, and also projecting things so that it was perfect just constantly. Now, I feel like there would be a bug in the investment thing because if all of them ran on the same software...
Screwing with supply and demand.
Yeah, it would kind of fuck with some stuff. But... at a smaller scale,
yeah.
Imagine if you never had to look at that, and it could take everything.
So you're basically looking at the side of innovation and progressing society Mm-hmm. Kind of like we said, get away from the stupid stuff, the small mini meal things, so you could start focusing on the big ideas.
Exactly.
That new innovation. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, let's say it knew what you ate or whatever, and so you could have meals essentially delivered to you, or the food delivered to you, mm-hmm. or your car got itself fueled up, or anyway, your daily life was essentially taken care of.
That's admirable.
And so you could focus on the bigger things.
All right. And who's the girl's voice in Her? It's something Jones, the actor.
No, it's ScarJo. Scarlett Johansson?
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, her voice is insanely hot, though.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, exactly. So people were like, how could you fall in love with a robot's voice? She's a little seductive in the movie. If anyone hasn't watched it.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you're talking to an actual person.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, part of the main thing, because there's actually a whole brand of music now in Japan that's all, they type in like the notes and the words to the song and a robot sings it.
Wow.
It's digitally created. A program spits out the lyrics and then sings it in time with the song. And that's like it's a growing popularity of music in Japan.
That's crazy.
And so we're getting there. And what I'm starting to notice is we've got it like with index funds, we've got it. So that's the financial brain there. And then we've got that music and the advanced digital voice software that's mm-hmm. getting there. And so all of these things individually, self-driving cars, and then obviously with like Amazon Dash button and stuff like that, it's all there, but it's all in pieces.
Connecting all of them.
Yeah, it's all in pieces right now. And I feel like maybe never, or will everybody actually all do it all in one? Like Amazon and Google and Apple all working together just to get this one software out there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then if you were to combine all that with Siri right now, you'd probably have pretty much general intelligence. It'd be Frankenstein of general intelligence, but it'd be a start.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, sometimes it makes me sad to think about how far we could be if nobody cared about the glory.
Man, oh yeah. Well, I'm not even going to go into it because we can go into a whole conversation about how competition actually stagnates progress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a perfect example with all of them. Just if you combined all that collective knowledge, that collective hardware and software and everything these brilliant companies have,
mm-hmm.
the process you can create. But
yeah,
free market.
You know what? Like, it makes me sad sometimes when I'm sitting alone. Is the thought of how many scientists and their research have been lost when the scientist died because they didn't want to share it with anybody because they were on the verge of a breakthrough, only they never got to the breakthrough because mm-hmm. they died.
Yeah.
And if they had been like more open with it, because unfortunately our history is littered with people like Nikola Tesla, who's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to patent anything.
Yep.
Because by the time I do it, it's already old news and blah, blah, blah. And he ends up dying broke and alone.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so anyway, it's just unfortunate. Maybe I'm an idealist, who knows. So that's one of my life aspirations, is to see that, to see like a general intelligence.
Is the goal kind of to work with a company's department, or would you want to start your own firm and kind of grow on your vision?
We'll see, I guess. Mm. We'll see. It's a molding thing. I wouldn't have a problem working for something else, working for another company to start mm-hmm. to start off, because I feel like why not, right?
Yeah.
There's no reason not to, at least to get a foot in the door and see what's going on. Yeah. My brother and I have always wanted to start a company or a brand or something, so that might also be a thing.
You guys would definitely be a very good, dangerous duo. Yeah. With your two separate backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'd be happy with it. All right. So that's my big thing right now that just kind of came up in the past couple months, really. So what about yourself?
Oh, man, I don't know. When I've never really had these big... I've always been envious of the people who knew what they always wanted to do, right? They had this, I want to be a doctor at age 12, and they always knew... the two things I've kind of always known growing up is I'm deeply fascinated by the body. I'm fascinated by the environment. and I never wanted to work a desk job. Unfortunately, I've been a little trapped in that.
Did all of this.
Yes. but I also wanted to like explore a little bit too. I wanted to have like a wide diversification of a career. And I don't think career hopping is a bad thing. I think, you know, as we've talked about before, it elicits a lot of growth and things like that. So fortunately, I have had 4 different careers now in 4 years. And that's not even, you know, all the half dozen stupid little jobs in high school and college where you're working, you know, JCPenney and all those little things you're doing. But like career wise, I've already had 4 pretty distinctly different major careers. And now hopefully my new degree will lead me to 5. But I don't know. I know I want to make some impact in the environment, you know, as we've talked about, it kind of saddens me the things that are going on. So if I can find my niche, and agriculture is a really big niche for me that I really want to get into and change the way we produce agriculture because it's really inefficient. You know, there's so many things wrong with it. But I don't know. I get caught up in that wanting to change the whole world, right? Where you see the plastic island in the middle of the Pacific that's 3 times the size of Texas. I'm like, oh, I want to engineer a way to solve that. And then I see like, oh, the rainforest is getting cut down because of palm oil in the southeast. I'm like, no, I want to fix that problem too. So it's all these myriad of things where unfortunately I'm still in that mindset of I want to change the world completely. Mm-hmm. And then you grow older and you realize, all right, that's not possible for anyone. You need to focus on your little niche.
Yeah.
And as much as those other things bother you, hopefully there's someone out there, you know, or teams of other people out there that are going after that. Mm-hmm. So agriculture is definitely the big one. You know, I'm a big believer in health. Health comes from what you eat. So I'd really like to make a big impact in United States agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of gear us towards that regenerative organic cycle. So hopefully my career will kind of lead me that path.
That's awesome. So a couple things that makes me think of. One, have you seen I think they call them, it's like the industrial farms. They're not industrial farms. Maybe that's not the right
factory.
Word. The factory farm where mm-hmm. it's literally a gigantic building that's like 6 or 10 stories tall.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is just all like hydroponics and aquaponics.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Oh man.
Those
they're like hyper efficient and there's almost, it's like 5% waste or something like that.
Yep.
Some outrageously low number of waste. And they can grow as many. It's like there's a weird factoring thing where it's like, yes, it's the same square footage as a farm, but they can actually grow like 5 times as much or something like that.
Because you're going vertical and it's not efficiency.
It's not just that. Yeah, it's the increase in efficiency because they can monitor every plant essentially all the time.
And you're using very, very few resources, mm-hmm. like insanely few resources. Yeah.
'Cause they don't need to water a whole field. They can just have individual piping that gives each plant exactly as much water as it needs to mm-hmm. grow to where it needs to grow. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I think if you could run something like that on like solar power, mm-hmm. it would essentially be self-sustaining.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, there's actually, beautifully enough, I saw there's hydroponic watercress, lettuce, and one other thing I actually saw in Trader Joe's this last week where I was incredibly impressed.
We were just talking about this like 10 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Hydroponics.
But that's definitely part of the key because the leafy vegetables and herbs and things you can grow in hydroponics, mm-hmm. that takes all that farmland that doesn't need to be used, all those resources that don't need to be used. So unfortunately, you can't grow everything, but that's a big piece of the puzzle. And you can create a bunch of local warehouses with that where you have, you know, you can set up those things anywhere. It doesn't matter the environment. It doesn't matter anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely a huge key.
So real quick, what was the cost comparison between the hydroponic and the traditional lettuce?
It was actually about the same.
Oh, there we go. And what's funny is it might have cost less to make the hydroponic one.
I mean, you don't have land investment, right? Mm-hmm. So your capital investment right up front, like, don't get me wrong, you still have to pay for a warehouse, you have to set up the systems, the technology, but those capital costs depreciate over time. And then per product, your cost is going to just dwindle, especially once you get a good system set up and you got mm-hmm. all those things. So yeah, I think I think it'll really come down to as prices lower, you don't have variable seasons, so you can grow year round,
mm-hmm.
same yield no matter what.
So with this, I mean, I know everybody's like, oh, industrial farming is like terrible, but that's more like in your traditional farms, right? Where you got a lot of waste and stuff.
Yeah.
But with, I know last week we talked about the E-Myth, right? Setting up a system. If you could pretty much set up a system so that you knew exactly, you could just tweak almost to the ounce the amount of water that a plant got over its lifetime, the amount of like nutrients that were in the soil, just the crops, everything is so finely tuned and you can just keep tuning it that you could run almost a near perfect system for farming. And it, oh man, it'd run like clockwork. It would be like a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Only, yeah, it would actually be a factory. It's a gigantic building.
But a good factory farm.
Yeah, but a good factory, because it's more like organic fruits and vegetables, and all that stuff is coming out instead mm-hmm. of animals.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And that's, yeah. That's, I'm just big. I don't know. I enjoy those little things. I enjoy, for me, like the most important thing, and we'll kind of get into like mantras and stuff, mm-hmm. is... all these arguments about like, you know, healthcare is right and all these things are right. And this, that might be rights and marriage is a right, whatever. That's a right from society. The only right you're really given when you're born is your body.
Mm.
Like that's literally the only thing you're entitled to is this body and whatever comes with it, whether you're healthy or not. That's the only thing you're guaranteed in life, realistically. And if you're healthy, then you know, you're already a huge leg up on the game.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, I mean, those are societal rights that were basically created by society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mother Nature doesn't give you anything when you're born. Gives you a body, and back in the day it was, all right, now go find some water and food, or your parents, you know, find it for you.
A body and like a slap in the face.
Yeah. So that's right. I'm so passionate about health, and it really peeves me when people don't take their health seriously because you're neglecting and taking for granted literally the only thing you're guaranteed in life,
mm-hmm.
which is this body. And that's the only thing you owe it to really take care of. You know, everything on top of that is just gravy. But really, if you don't take care of your body, you're forsaking this amazing, beautiful organism that you were given.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you're guaranteed.
Yeah, it always cracks me up when people are like, man, yeah, these people that are super successful have these great bodies, but it's because they can pay these people to do all this, to cook all their meals for them and write these workout plans for them, yada, yada, yada. But what if it was the opposite?
Mm-hmm.
What if they actually got super successful because they were taking care of their body in the first place?
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, which came first? So, because I know literally everybody is just, basically says that you have to have good nutrition and exercise and all this stuff in order to become successful.
Yeah.
And some people have become successful in spite of the fact.
Yeah.
But the vast majority, it's all because they were healthy.
And man, that's the sad thing too. If you work your whole life and you have this great portfolio and then you get to retire based off your savings. And then you get to that retirement point and your body's broken down, your joints hurt, you didn't take care of yourself. So, you know, you're overweight, you've already damaged your heart to a certain extent. And I see the logic where it's like, yeah, this is a lot of work. You know, so-and-so Frank Sinatra smoked cigars and was an alcoholic and he lived till he was 80 something. I'm going to do the same thing. That's the exception to the rule. Why wouldn't you want to use your body for everything that it's worth, right? Why would you not want to have the best possible body you could have?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not looks. It's health. It's function.
Longevity.
Yeah. So that's definitely like my key belief.
Great, great Frank Sinatra quote, which is pretty much the opposite of what we've been talking about. He said, I feel bad for people that don't drink because when they wake up in the morning, that's the best they'll feel all day.
That is a fantastic quote, though.
Frank Sinatra.
Frankie. You know, he was a huge pessimist. Most people around him noted that he was not a happy guy.
Most performers are not happy people.
Mm.
Like, stage presences, stand-up comics, all of them, they're all extremely self-critical people.
Yep.
And they, like, battle depression. Like, they hate themselves because they're so self-critical and they're always improving and tweaking and improving and tweaking.
Never good enough, though.
It's never good enough. Oh. Yeah.
What about you, though? What would be, like, one of your key beliefs in life?
One of my key beliefs. One of my key beliefs is that everybody should learn every day. You should learn something. And if you're not engaging your brain in learning something, then you're just staying stagnant. And so there's either growth or death, right? It's either growing or shrinking. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if you're not using your brain, much like you say your body, right? And just to add on to that kind of, if you're not stimulating your brain, if you're not learning something, if you're not challenging yourself every day, then you are declining. You're sliding backwards. And I've found that with myself on days, this sounds silly, but on days that I don't like listen to a podcast or an audiobook, or I'm not able to read, or something like that, specifically nonfiction, right? Cause I'll read fiction pretty much every day, but that's it usually later in the day and at night. If I'm not learning something or doing something challenging to my brain on those days, I will feel myself getting just slightly more lethargic.
Yeah.
Just slightly slower, just slightly more tired. And I could see how if you graduate college, right, and then nobody's making you do anything after that, you don't have to take any courses, you don't have to read any books, you don't have to do anything. You can just kind of go to whatever job it is that you have, be it a desk job or not, and just do that. And nobody's going to make you do anything else. And there are people that like 10 years after college or 5 years after college, they have forgotten half the things that they've ever learned.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wait, how do you not know this? Or how have you not kept reading or kept learning or kept doing things? I don't know. So that'd be one of my main tenets would be learn something or stimulate your brain every day.
We've talked about the Netflix thing a little bit, and there's definitely preliminary research that shows that it does tend to increase cognitive decline, even no matter what age you're in. The whole Netflixing and chill for hours and binging, it really does affect you.
Oh, yeah.
I think decades from now, I think the rate of Alzheimer's will actually increase, and it'll get younger in age, and people will develop pre-symptoms much earlier in life. Because of that, because this constant flow of entertainment where you're not really having to use your brain, I think over time we'll realize that that actually has like really big effects long-term in health. I think it's too soon to quantify it now, but I think long-term we'll see.
One thing on that I'm just going to throw this out of there. I just like just right this second came up with this, right? So I've seen a lot of movies, right? A lot of movies. And I've got a pretty good memory of all the movies that I've seen. One thing that I'm thinking about with Netflix is there's always something else. There's no time for the content that you consumed to like marinate and just sit in your brain.
Yeah.
Right? There's always the next episode. There's always the next show. There's always something to take the place of the thing you just watched. And so if you don't let stuff sit and like sink in, then it's not going to stay with you as long, and you're not going to remember it, and you're not going to retain it. I know it goes kind of against what I was saying, but this is like, I'm talking about like fiction consumption, and you're just going to consume and consume and consume, and then your brain is going to get into those like lazy habits of thinking where you're not having to come up with these imaginative different areas of your life. You're not having to come up with stories or anything like that because you're just told stories every day.
Yeah, that's good. And yeah, there's definitely a difference between, you know, watching a movie and critically thinking about it and talking with your significant other and dissecting it, and then watching 6 hours of Netflix, and then the next day watching 6 hours of Netflix, and the next day watching six, you know, you don't get that time to process and analyze. Yeah, that's definitely a key differentiator. What else? What are some other ones?
So you got learning, and then obviously I'm a big proponent of physical fitness. That's just something that I've always been. I kind of adapted the thing from Pavel Tatsulin about being strong, right? I think strength is key to everything. Strength and mobility is key. So I try at least 3 times a week. Sometimes, ideally, it's more than that. But at least 3 times a week, I'll strength train. And with that, I'll I'm not going for these crazy, like, four sets of 10 workouts. Mm-hmm. It's just usually two, three sets of 2 to 3 reps of these heavy, big lifts. Mm-hmm. And then obviously core, and then big on stretching. And then just that, just getting strong and stretching, I've found that that increases my running speed, that increases my muscular endurance, it increases everything. I don't know why. I honestly don't understand how physiologically that exactly, how strength turns into endurance. I'm not positive how that works, but it just seems to be the case for me.
Can I ask you, so where does that fit in? Do you have specific personal goals as far as fitness, certain numbers you want to hit, certain
yep.
for your Ironman, is there a certain time you want to break? What are your kind of goals there?
Sure. So in terms of physical fitness, I want to be able to deadlift and back squat 2 times my body weight.
Okay.
Which actually, hold on. Yeah, I'm pretty close already.
Mm-hmm.
But those are my goals. I want to deadlift and squat, back squat 2 times my body weight.
Nice.
And then, yeah, so that's my current goal for those two numbers.
What about long term?
Long term? See, one thing I've found is that pretty much anything above that, anything above about 2 times your body weight, is when you seem to start getting into messing with your joints and stuff. It's just the weight yeah. is just too heavy.
Ito Portal.
Yeah, it's just too heavy at that point. And so anything above like a deadlift of like, I don't know, right around 315 or so, or like a back squat of about that same number,
mm-hmm.
you start to run into problems, right? Like a lot of people get their back injured, their knees get injured, all this stuff when you get crazy high up there in the numbers. And so once I get to that level, it's just like, all right, I'm good. Just sustain.
Yeah.
A couple, few times a week. And then it'll just get easier and easier because I'll just be doing the same weight and then that'll be fine.
So that's kind of your long, you want to be the strong old man, the mobile old man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like yeah. that.
Yeah. Cause you'll shake a hand and we've talked to this. We've talked about this before. There's a relative of mine, I think he'd be like a god grandparent. I'm not sure, but he's an older gentleman and he's done construction for his whole life, right?
Mm-hmm.
He owns a construction company, but okay. also goes out there and does the stuff.
Oh, good man.
Yeah. Builds houses, stuff like that. So you shake that guy's hand and you know he means business. It's like, okay, all right, this is all right.
You want to be that guy? Come over here, grandkids.
Yeah.
Fail grandpappy's hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also might come from my grandpa. My grandpa, super strong handshake.
Yeah.
Very firm handshake. And so, yeah, I guess that's a thing of mine. I don't want to just be like crazy, outrageous strong.
Yeah.
Like being strong is great, but there's a cap to that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, it would be just muscular endurance. In terms of like cardio and biking and swimming and stuff like that, which comes from me training for this half Ironman right now. This will be my second, I guess, official Ironman race. I did Ironman New Zealand a while ago, kind of shotgunned it, but still finished before the cutoff. So now I'm doing the half.
Nice.
And I know we've talked about running and runner's high and how you don't actually get it, or you don't seem to actually get it. I seem to definitely get a runner's high.
Getting in that rhythm.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, I can just go and it just feels so good. It's the weirdest thing.
I will say too, a little different, but with the handshaking, that's kind of always been my goal too. And that's come back from my dad.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to like work on the ships in Alaska and he used to like be the guy that was beating ice off the side of the ship with a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
So his strength, even though he's been an office worker for a little while now, his strength is just unreal handshake wise. And it's so funny, like in the corporate world, people be like, oh, you got to watch that guy, his handshake. He'll cripple your hand. You know, his handshake's so strong. Or they'll make jokes about certain guys and all these guys, I shake their hand and I'm like, this is nothing. Like my dad would destroy this guy's handshake.
Can we talk about handshakes for a second?
But no, that's what I want to be. Same thing. I want to be the guy with the, where people shake my hand and they're like, good God, the strength, just the power.
Uh-huh.
It's that like instant respect.
Yeah. So on handshakes, I think that's handshake is definitely an art form, right?
Oh yeah.
So because there's a difference between crushing someone's soul through their hand and just having like a firm handshake to the point where you're like, okay, this guy could definitely shake my hand harder, but he's not.
A strong presence.
Yeah, a strong presence. So this has happened to me a couple of times, right? I shake everybody's hand the same way. Mm-hmm. Guy, girl, whatever age. Obviously, kids, I'm not going to go crazy on shaking their hands. But
tough love.
Yeah. Guy, girl, no matter what, I always shake everybody's hand the same way. I've got one handshake, and that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, it was always, obviously, I had this grandpa who... And he had this funny thing where he would like try to grind your knuckles. And so now, literally my hand, if you grind my knuckles, nothing, it doesn't even, there was a guy who's like, oh, check this out. And he tried to like pinch some nerve in my hand or like grind my knuckles. I was like, what are you trying to do? I don't get it. My hand's numb. So I shake everybody's hand the same way. And several times I've gone to shake a girl's hand or a guy's hand,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just give them the normal handshake and like, ow, what do you mean? Ow. Like you just like crushed my hand. I just shook your hand like everybody else. And then what always happens is whoever is standing right next to them is like, shake my hand. And I'll shake their hand. Like what's wrong with that? It's the same handshake. They're just so used to getting like the dead fish handshake that, cause I know there are some dudes that like shake women's hands differently than guys' hands.
Yeah.
I just shake everybody's hand the exact same way. And it's, I don't know. I think that your handshake says a lot. I've had people judge me both positively and negatively by my handshake for pretty much my whole life, but it's always been because it's a firm handshake.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been because it's like a floppy handshake.
Yeah.
So I think that a firm handshake is... It speaks volumes before you ever see, before you ever even say anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree to that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. If any of you out there do not, if you give anybody the old floppy fish, then you're probably not sending the right message.
Then you're a floppy fish as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, be you guy or girl, does not matter. Anybody, even like your little kids.
I respect women who go in with like a firm handshake.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. It's so rare that it's a wonderful characteristic.
You're
like, oh wow, yeah.
Have a handshake. It goes back to that when you're a woman. There's that false thing. Where I don't know where the societal gender role norms came in or whatever, but you're not supposed to be strong as a female, right? For like the longest time, women didn't want to be seen as strong, like throughout the 30s, 40s, 50s, all the way up until kind of recently, where you're starting to see women really getting big into sports and CrossFit and all these things. And there's a big respect to that, you know?
Found out recently, listening to an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger,
mm-hmm.
that he, I guess he got a couple tiny requests for women bodybuilding competitions because there weren't any. And so he did one of the very first women bodybuilding competitions and then it just blew up and became wildly popular. And essentially before he made that contest, it wasn't like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't like, there were a couple of girls that were doing it, but that like muscular physique for women wasn't as popular as it was until after he started doing that contest.
Good man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go into a rant real quick, and then I really want to get into a mantra.
Look,
women and men have different standards physically. It's just known, right? Like, no woman will ever be as strong as the strongest man. It's just we're built differently.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's fine. You should still try to be the strongest woman, and you could still be stronger than a large population of men, but the strongest man in the world will always be stronger than the strongest woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way we're made. So in sports... Same thing. Women hit from the ladies' tees in golf, which is good. They can't hit as far as a ball. So to make it more fair, like handicap-wise in golf, that's not a diss or anything. That's just what it's called in golf, the handicap. Women hit a few yards front in the ladies' tees in golf to give them that advantage so that they hit the hole in the same distance. And one of the sports that differs is basketball. And for some reason in basketball, it's always been that the women... have the same height hoop that the men do. And I don't understand that because women aren't typically as tall as men. And it's just not fair. If that was a woman, I would not want the same height hoop as a man's hoop. You know, there's no 7 foot tall women.
Even in volleyball, the net's shorter.
Exactly. So lower the WNBA rims from 10 feet to 9 feet. More people watch the games because women are going to be slam dunking and alley-ooping and all these things that men are. Because if you lower it by a foot, then you're hugely leaping and bounding. Now there's maybe like two women in the WNBA who can dunk, Brittany Griner and I forget who the other girl is. But lower it, make it equal. It's not a discrimination thing. It's just a fact. You're not as tall as men. Why should you be expected to play on the same height of hoop as men? Mm-hmm. Especially, like you said, when volleyball is different. But yeah, WNBA needs to change it. It's not a discrimination thing against women. It's to make the game more fun for you as a woman. And why not? If that was a 6 foot tall woman and I could dunk on a 9 foot rim, but I couldn't dunk on a 10 foot rim, I'd be like, give me the 9 foot rim. I want to dunk. I want to dunk over some chicks. All right. I want to throw this thing off the backboard and alley-oop it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little rant.
Yeah. Hey, why not? Because we can.
So, mantras, life values.
Mantras. So, I think we touched on a couple principles we live by. One, so did you want to go into like quotes?
Yeah, I like quotes. Quotes, mantras are kind of
quotes,
same.
Quotes, mantras.
Mm-hmm. All
right. So one of my core tenets, right? One of the quotes that I think about probably every day, and it came from a very unexpected source, but the quote is, what is today, but yesterday is tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's like, oh, we can do it tomorrow. But it's, if you always push something to tomorrow, then it's like yesterday, what, or today is yesterday's tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
This is the day that you said that you were going to do it pretty much always, right? Unless there's a specific scheduled event. Pretty much you could assume that at one point you said today was going to be the day, because it's always tomorrow, which is, it kind of comes back to everything. I never understand why people right before they start a diet binge eat. Like, oh, I'm starting a diet, so I got to eat all this pizza and ice cream and stuff. Like, just start it.
Kind of like the different example of bachelor party, right? Got to get it all out of your system before you get married.
Yeah, bachelor party. Yeah. Oh, man.
But it happens in a lot of different instances in life.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say. You're it's a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just like binge. It's like, but wait a sec. You already had all this time to get this all out of your system.
Yep.
Or you've already been eating like crap for this whole time. all that binge eating the day before you go on a diet is going to do is make it that much harder to go on the diet. If you're motivated to start a diet and it's like a Friday night, then start it on the Friday night.
Yeah.
Don't binge eat Saturday, Sunday, and then start it Monday. Start a Friday, eat clean Saturday, eat clean Sunday, eat clean Monday. Just roll right into it.
So you found that kind of creates a large part of accountability and gets rid of procrastination in your life. Mm-hmm. And
because I'm a hardcore procrastinator. And so that and then like you need to do today's work today, essentially, is the bottom line. Because you don't do it today, then tomorrow you have tomorrow's work and yesterday's work.
So how often do you repeat that to yourself, and when do you kind of repeat it? When you feel like you're in a slump, or do you just say it regularly?
Usually, it's kind of just in the back of my head at all times. But if I find myself thinking that I could do, like, oh, I could just do that tomorrow, that it seems like whenever the word tomorrow comes into my head, that quote is immediately followed. It's like, but what is today but yesterday is tomorrow? Like, crap. Because most of the time, if I think about pushing something to tomorrow, it's because it's already been pushed to tomorrow once.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase like eat the frog or like eat the elephant, whatever. Yep. In terms of difficult things to do, typically people push these frogs or these elephants down the line until you get your entire to-do list is just frogs, right?
Yeah.
And so to avoid that, you have to break them up. Mm-hmm. You have to break them up in a plan. And it's kind of like what you said about the 80-20 principle of diet, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be 100% productive every single, or 100% on the diet every single day. So instead of having any super lazy day or any like super productive day,
mm-hmm.
I'm just like productive for X amount of time and then like lazy for X amount of time on any given day, right? And so Saturday, Sunday, Friday, every day of the, like all 7 days of the week, I do something that is productive and towards the goals that I'm working on or towards the projects that I'm working on. And then just to keep that momentum going, that ball rolling.
That's smart. Mm-hmm. I used to have a huge problem with that too. And it's just that you get in this, I don't really want to do this right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to suck. This is not going to be fun. And I'm a huge believer that mindset is literally everything. You can tell yourself, you could be eating the worst dinner in the world and you could tell yourself just like, oh my God, this is so good. And it will change the flavor of the food. If you mean it and you generally go after it. But
sometimes when Sabrina isn't home, I eat for nutrition exclusively.
Mm.
And I'll have, I think most recently I had spaghetti squash mixed with spaghetti sauce, like just a bit of spaghetti sauce, and then a bunch of spinach. And then I think I had like some, there might have been tuna involved in that. Or no, and then a can of sardines. And so I had everything. The can of sardines was separate, but I mixed the spinach and the the spinach and the spaghetti squash and the spaghetti sauce, and I heated it up, and I ate that. And then I ate the sardines. So I was like, all right, nutritionally sound dinner. Here we go.
I'm doing the body good.
And she's just looking at me like, what are you eating?
Is that animal.
Is that good? Yeah, it's nutritionally healthy.
But that positivity is huge. And I use the same thing with work. Like, man, there are so many times where, or if I'm feeling overwhelmed, same thing. I have work, I have school, I got all these other things going on. I'll just say, I love this. This is fun. I love this. This is so much fun. I love this. This is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that just like, you say that over and over again, all of a sudden, it's not a big deal anymore. It's not that hard. It's easier. It becomes more manageable. That stress kind of goes away. That overwhelming feeling goes away. You feel like you're enjoying it. But that mantra, man, that's a huge...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to have something. And along with procrastination, a lot of what happens is you'll push it to tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then just to clarify, I don't get everything done, right? On any given day, but I'll start on it, right? And so kind of like these podcast episodes or anything else, let's say we do a bender and it's like a 2-hour episode. It means I have to set aside 2 hours or actually probably more like 3 hours to just listening to the whole thing to make sure there isn't any weird things or
like, overlaps in the sound
or overlaps or the tracks get offset because it could happen anywhere. It's happened super late. It's happened super early. So you got to listen to the whole thing, right? And that's just like a monstrosity. And so you're like, crap, I got to do this. And so now instead of that, it's just, if I can only get 5 minutes done, I get 5 minutes done because that's 5 minutes less that I have to do later. And so everybody looks at the whole ladder or the whole mountain like, crap, that's a long climb. But all you need to do is just take that one step, that next rung up, and you're already that much closer.
And then tomorrow you just go look back and like, all right, I've already started this. This is no big deal. It's already in motion. Just got to pick up the ball. Yeah. Another one of my favorite ones is you are as limitless as you think you are. Whenever you're feeling stressed, whenever you have that self-doubt, because self-doubt's a big one, man.
Oh, absolutely. If you don't think you can do something, you cannot do it.
Absolutely not. Yeah. But that limitless thing, you're putting that into your mind that you can do anything. Mm-hmm. You are so much more capable than you're currently holding yourself at. And you just say that over and over again. And those are... So you kind of do this constantly with your mantras. It's just kind of always there and it's
like a it's honestly like a trigger. Mm-hmm. If I find myself thinking, it's like an if then sort of thing.
Yeah.
If I think to push something to tomorrow, then that one particular quote pops into my mind. And it's not like a constant loop going in the back of my head.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'd say that kind of too. There's those triggers. But some days that I wake up and I know it's just going to be like a slam of a day, just from start to finish, constant stuff going on. I will wake up and I will just start, you know, while I'm doing my little hangs in the morning, my little morning routine, drinking my tea, I will just kind of say those mantras in my head and get things going. yeah. just to kind of preface my brain that I'm going to destroy today. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care what's going on. I know it's going to be hell, but I'm going to conquer this.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, so you got to do that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so that goes right along. The quote that's been on my fridge for months now, I drew like a little picture of a clock, and then it just says, remember, time lost cannot be regained.
I love it.
And so time is this currency, right? You can always make more money. You can always heal. You can always do all these other things. But as of right now, there is no way to get more time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get more time. And so once you spend that hour not scrolling through Facebook, I guess you could, as a coined example, once you spend that hour scrolling through Facebook, you're no longer going to have that hour to do anything else, right?
You realize that's a wasted.
It's an hour. It's essentially an hour wasted that you just spent doing nothing that you could have been doing literally anything else.
I've seen those graphs too, where it's like, it's got like a dot for every year you're alive, or a dot for every month you're alive. So there's like, you know, on average 90 years or something like that. So there's 90 dots. And then it shows like, this is the dot you are at.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how far you are in life, or how much of your life you have left, or how much of your life has already gone by. And that's like a kick in the butt that it's like, all right, this counts. I only have so many dots left. I'm going to make every single one of these count.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do that per year or whatever, but that's a good motivator too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly. I did that. There's a pretty big Alabama fan that I work with. I did that with, with Alabama games left. How many he had seen and how many are left like in his lifetime. He got a little sad.
Oh man. You could look at it both ways though. You know, appreciation mm-hmm. or. I want to go back to the, I know we talk about fitness a lot, but with fitness too, and there's a big divide on this, right? There's the Steve Maxwells who are like, I want to remain super calm. I want my central nervous system to be really calm. I don't want my hormones to fluctuate when I'm working out and trigger these stress responses. And then there's the guys who are like, you know, I want to be screaming and pounding my head to metal. And I'm not necessarily on the hardcore side, but that's why I don't like the Planet Fitness, and I don't like the douchey side either, don't get me wrong. But again, mindset's really big. So if you're in a workout and you're like, oh, this workout's crushing me. Like I'm so tired, blah blah blah, you're not gonna get through it. Like mm-hmm. your mind will overcome your body. And that's when I work out, I get pumped up. I like to listen to music. My mantra when I work out is like, you're a monster, right? I'm tired. Muscle aches, I want to stop, the run's too hard, I'm huffing and puffing, my lungs burn, and I just scream to myself, not scream, but in my head, you know, you're a monster, keep going, you got this. And that's really important too, that mindset. If you go into an activity that requires, you know, these big hormone responses, you want to get pumped up, you need high energy levels, you have to treat it accordingly. So to treat workouts with this like, you know, whatever, going to the gym, mm-hmm. have that mantra that pushes you. You don't got to be, you know, screaming when you squat or whatever, but have something that gives you that energy, that punch.
Mm-hmm. One form of exercise, I guess we could call it that I've found that particular mindset doesn't seem to work in is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Like, if I find myself thinking like, oh, I'm aggressive, then I'm going to make mistakes, or I'm going to exert too much energy.
Yeah.
And I've found that, like, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you honestly need to have a mind like water.
That's true.
You need to be as absolutely calm as you can. Like, you're still hyped up, and you're still focused, but you need to be, like, as calm as absolutely possible.
Yeah.
The best strategy that seems to work at every level is the anaconda approach. You just like slowly constrict, and then you wait for them to do move, and you just kind of work your way in there. They'll make a mistake, and you capitalize on it. And so I would say just about the only one that I can think of is jiu-jitsu, where you honestly need to be reasonably calm for as long as possible.
The mantra changes to don't die in that instance. Don't die.
Yeah.
Just breathe. Don't get choked out.
Yeah.
But
along with the mindset on the other side of that, though, when I was grossly underprepared for the Ironman New Zealand, I got about I finished the swim fine. I was about halfway through the bike or so and got a flat tire, right? And it was about 54 degrees outside at that particular time. And so it wasn't crazy cold, but it wasn't crazy hot either. It was cold if you're sitting there in your little Iron Man skin suit on the side of the road in the rain trying to change a tire. And so it got a bit cold, right? And it was kind of shaking. And I flipped my bike upside down, and the water bottle that I had emptied out because it wasn't it wasn't designed to hold water upside down. So I didn't have any water. I just passed an aid station. So in order to fill up in my water bottle, I would have had to turn back around. And so after I finally got my tire changed and then back and pumped back up and back on the road, I spent the next 45 minutes, because that's how long it took me to get to the next aid station. I spent the next 45 minutes just thinking to myself, if I stop now, I'm going to have to get at least this far in another one in order to finish one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the next half, so for the entire rest of the bike and for the entire rest of the marathon afterwards, for the run, I was just, that was just like a mental loop that I have to keep going, because in order for me to say that I finished an Ironman, I would have to get at least that far in another one to finish it. So it's like, just got to keep going. Got to keep going.
Man, those mantras are huge.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll back to something I just thought about. Another kind of life goal is, I think, providing for yourself is a huge pride in life, and you find out a lot about yourself when you have to provide for yourself. Mm-hmm. And in modern life, you could almost go your entire life without having to provide for yourself. You can eat out at restaurants every day. You can live in buildings where everyone takes care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything. You have a super that comes up and changes the light bulb if you need it or whatever. But I don't know if that creates a good pride system. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gets away from biology to an extent. So I've always wanted to kind of combine the best of both worlds, and I want to build my house. I want to acquire the knowledge to be able to put the foundation down, you know, frame up the entire house and build an entire house by my hands. Maybe not by myself, because you need some help when you're framing, doing things like that. But I want to physically build my own house, my own shelter, so to say. That doesn't mean there can't be luxuries in it, of course. And with that, I would like to have a house that has like the solar panels and the rain catching system and my own produce and chickens and things like that, and be able to live where I can self-sustain myself if I have to. Doesn't mean I always have to. Doesn't mean I can't go out to dinners or go out to bars and have wine or whatever. But to have that pride that if something were to happen, A, I created this system by hand, by myself, and I have this pride in my shelter and where I live, and I can provide for myself if I have to. And on a regular basis, I'm providing a lot of my life for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge kind of evolutionary thing that I want to get back to and have that pride in my living situation.
Yeah. And I think with that, your knowledge of the system that is your house would be far past what anybody else has. Well, what most people have.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the most part, and this sounds silly, for the most part, a lot of people flip the switch and the light comes on and they're just like, yeah, it's voodoo. I have no idea how that works. Or ventilation, or even just indoor plumbing.
Devil's magic.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I flush the toilet and it goes away. That's all. I don't know. And so having the knowledge and the base to, like, let's say your light stops working, right? And you put in a new battery, or sorry, a new light bulb, still not working. So there's something wrong with the wiring, right? You could then know exactly where the wires run in your wall, where the junction is. And you're like, oh, wait, I had to splice it here because it wasn't long enough. And so you can just cut like a little tiny 6-inch hole in your drywall, pull it out. Oh, there it is. And you can just patch that real quick and then you're good to go. Instead of having to hire an electrician who then has to come out, tear your whole wall off, and then repair everything just to find that one splice that was the issue.
I don't think it's like a man thing. I think it's a human pride issue. I think it's caring for yourself, being able to support yourself. I think that's just a human pride issue. And it doesn't mean you can't have people care for you and do things for you on certain occasions. But to be able to have that pride that you know you can handle all these different things, that's a huge issue too. You know, big part of life.
Oh yeah, yeah. It, I guess as a guy, I really only know, but I definitely think that that sort of thing, like being able to provide for yourself and do things without relying on anybody else, is definitely deeply ingrained in guys.
Yeah,
it's just, yeah. Asking for help is very hard. I think it's which I've kind of forced myself to get into the habit of asking for help, even if I don't necessarily need it, just to make myself more comfortable with it, because it does go against a lot of my, well, I guess what feels like ingrained nature.
Yeah.
So now I've kind of been able to get past that. And so now I'm able to just walk up to somebody and ask for directions or ask where this is or ask where that is, instead of wandering around the supermarket for 5 hours trying to find this one very specific item. Yeah. Like, oh, let me just ask somebody who works here and knows.
But don't get me wrong either, because I would love to do that with my girlfriend and significant other, to have that experience too of doing it together, and her having that pride as well, where she looks at this house at the end of the day and like, I did that. I put that light up. I did that drywall. I sanded that. I painted that. Like that. I think it's a mutual thing too. I'd love for my partner to also experience that.
Mm-hmm.
Super important.
Absolutely.
So it's not just do it all by myself, but I think shelter, providing for yourself, those kind of basic needs in life, the shelter, the food, the water, now kind of the energy, not very much a need, but in modern society, considered such.
Oh, yeah. I'd put it down as a need, just because, why not?
But what about you? Any
things like that?
Any kind of goals like that? Paint a portrait of yourself?
Let's see. So, it sounds silly, but I am slowly in the process of getting rid of things, right?
Mm.
And it's not, I say slowly, but it's at least every week I've been getting rid of about a grocery bag worth of stuff. Or sorry, not a grocery bag, about a garbage bag worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not just getting rid of it, but like selling it or donating it or something like that. And I'm in the process of reducing everything I own, because I know we talked about earlier how we kind of moved into this. We moved into a new place and it had an extra bedroom that we didn't actually need, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have. And it kind of filled up with stuff. And then I just kind of felt, I don't know, I felt weighed down. And I was getting, or I've been getting rid of things at such a clip that people are like, hey, are you all right? Like, is everything okay? And because I'm super happy.
How you doing financially, pal? You need
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, most of the stuff I just donate to Goodwill.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not actually getting any money for this stuff. But just getting rid of things that are just essentially taking up space is so relieving. I find myself getting happier. And sometimes I'll make like $5 here or $10 there. But it's not actually about the money. It's just about getting rid of the thing.
Decluttering yourself.
Yeah. Mm. And it's, oh man, it is fantastic. The first week was really difficult because I had to get rid of some shirts and make some tough calls as far as what I wanted to keep and what I wanted to get rid of. But after that first week and some of those things, and I broke those very first emotional ties to things, it's just been getting easier and easier. And I've been slowly reducing down. And now I look at things differently. Like, do I actually need this? Or is, like, when was the last time I used this?
Yeah.
When was the last time I used that? Because a lot of the answers is never. Like, I haven't used this probably since the week I bought it. So I just get rid of it, right? Or the shirt's been hanging in my closet, I think, for like 6 years. Like, okay, I haven't worn this shirt in 6 years. Time to go.
Yeah. Deliberate living.
Yeah. And so deliberate living, and I don't know if it would be minimalism, because I'm not against stuff.
See, I don't like the word.
Yeah.
I think that's a bad...
It is. Yeah. It's kind of like global warming versus climate change.
Yeah.
It's like, global warming is just kind of like a bad word for it.
Calm down.
Yeah, yeah.
But you just want... It's hard to explain.
I just want less stuff.
Less things, but nice things, and things you use regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to like open my cabinet or my closet and it's just drop kicked full of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just want everything's there. I know what all of it is. It's all got its purpose, right?
Anyway. Yeah. I think we kind of have this responsibility, because in this magical scheme of life, we were lucky enough to be born on this invisible boundary that says we are United States citizens. And with that comes, for the average person, a plethora of opportunity and wealth that the rest of the world will probably never see or rarely see. Mm-hmm. So we kind of are in this beautiful, lucky situation, especially being kind of millennials and in the generation we are, that I think you kind of have this responsibility to live responsibly in that way, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you're given the situation doesn't mean you have to go all out and spend everything you can and buy everything you can. So especially the way I see it too, we're both in pretty good situations, especially for our age. So I think there's the idea that people don't like to get rid of stuff because they say, one day I might need this, right? Mm-hmm. One day I might do this thing where I might need this, or like books or things like that, which I understand some people like to look back on books. But if I could buy something and then donate it to Goodwill or to a charity or something where someone not as fortunate as me could then use that same product, I think that's kind of my responsibility in the place that I'm in to do what I can so that others can live a better life too. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those simple things that just using something, when you're done with it, don't keep it. Just donate it. Let someone else use it. Let someone else have that fortitude, that fortune to, you know, have those same experiences as you. That's a very small responsibility if you're in a good financial place that you can do to give back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely agree. And it just... I haven't said absolutely agree in a long time. That was one of my verbal tics I was trying to get rid of. Anyway, I'll probably...
It's working for the most part, though. Yeah. We're getting better. I know. Every once in a while, I slip in a you know or a like. I'm like, damn. Come on, Garrett. You did this for a reason.
Yeah. So with that, I guess it recently came out that if you make more than $60,000 a year...
I think it's $70,000.
$70,000 a year? Mm-hmm. Then you're in the global 1%.
Yes.
So you are... Yeah. So if you make more than $70,000 a year, you are in the, per household...
Which, funny coincidentally, that you've also said, you said before on one of our episodes that 70,000 is kind of the threshold of happiness.
Yep, that's the financial happiness cutoff. Mm-hmm. If you make more than $70,000 a year, you are not going to be any happier. If you, it doesn't matter if you make $1 million a year, anything above that is the happiness cutoff. It's all mentality at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you're not happy with 70, you're not going to be happy with 170 or 370.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of money, depending on how you live. Again, if you live deliberately, that's a lot of money, mm-hmm. you know? And like we kind of talked about before, when you buy things, that doesn't mean buy less things. Buy very important things to you. If you're going to go out and buy a set of dishes, because you don't need 20 dishes mm-hmm. if you live in two people. You know, you maybe need... 6 plates if you have people over, 6 bowls, you know, these kind of things. So go out and buy the nicest set of plates that you want, because have that mindset that I'm going to spend X amount of dollars on these plates and they are going to last me forever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of deliberate living. I think that's what minimalism tries to portray, but people get distracted by that word.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes people have like... For example, that documentary, the Minimalists, I think it was just called Minimalism, was the documentary.
Yeah.
That got popular. But that guy, he lives, I don't understand it. He lives in like a normal sized apartment that's just empty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? I feel like he's almost going against his own tenants. Like, all right, yeah, you say minimalism, so you have almost no stuff, but you have all this space.
Yeah.
It's just... It makes it look like you are impoverished almost. Like you have a room that has nothing but a singular chair and a lamp in it and a little small table.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't look like you're minimalist. That looks like you just don't have money to afford furniture. And so it's just like...
Some of that stuff looks funny too. Because you're not... What are you, sitting in the chair with the lamp and just... is that your reading room or something? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's not functional either.
Exactly. And so it was like, wait, what? This is minimal? But then on the flip side of that, you got... In the same movie, you've got the guy who designed the apartment and he wanted to be able to host a dinner party of 12. He wanted to be able to have guests over. He wanted to do all these crazy things in a what, 1,000 square foot or 800 square foot apartment?
I think it was even a little less than that.
Okay. But yeah, still. Yeah, in a, so we'll say 600 square foot. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it was tiny. In a tiny little space, he wanted to be able to do all of these things and live normally. And he just made the most use out of the space he had.
Yeah.
And he had like literally, he had literally a wall that slid out, beds and couches that folded down, tables that came out of nowhere. And I think that to me is what minimalism is.
Yeah.
It's using what you have to the absolute most efficiency.
Yeah.
Right? Like we essentially took a spare bedroom and turned it into a studio. We now could probably bring somebody in and be like, oh, wow, this is, okay, all right. This seems legit. Okay.
It's like the tiny house thing we've talked about. I don't want to live in a tiny house, but I like the design features. Mm-hmm. They use the space maximally. They do very, very smart things with storage and shelving and things like that, mm-hmm. that I think you're going to incorporate to a different house so that you don't need quite as much space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the I don't understand how tiny houses cost so much sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you just build it yourself for way cheaper. but I think that you're on to the same thing. Oh, that reminds me of a life goal I have. Another life goal I have is to have essentially, and I think we've talked about this, like a tiny house-sized library.
Mm.
Either like a room of my house that's pretty much all bookshelves with books, and I want to have read all of the books that are in it. So...
See, that'd be a cool thing that you build the library and that's kind of your motivator that this empty space needs to get filled. Mm-hmm. Time to get reading.
Yep. And you can only fill it with books that you read.
Yeah.
Yep. That'd be awesome. And, oh man, because as is, I already loan out books like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, oh, you got this problem? Here's a book to solve it. There is pretty much a book to solve just about every problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely true.
Yeah.
Any issue you have faced, someone has probably written about it.
Mm-hmm. And if nobody has, if like somehow you find a problem that there isn't a book about, you should probably write that book.
Mm-hmm. One other goal I would have, this kind of goes back to physically, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit, is summoning the seven. As you could probably tell through this conversation that my roots kind of go back environmental. So as far back as that other goal of, you know, really taking care of your body and your mind and things like that, I think we have a responsibility as humans to take care of our environment. If our environment goes to shit, we essentially can't live on this planet. Just fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you get to these super remote places where you're just away from everything and sometimes you're pushed to the brink of survival and you're realizing that this mountain wants to kill you. Or maybe doesn't want to, but you feel like it does.
Mm-hmm.
And nature's just overwhelming you. That's what makes you realize how grand this earth is and how little speck you are and kind of creates that appreciation.
I'm just going to wait until it's like a balmy 70 at the top of Everest.
A balmy 70.
And then I'll climb it.
Let it thaw out for a few decades.
Yeah. I summoned the seven. Oh, but did you summon the seven pre-2020 or post-2020?
Yep. A lot of things that I have kind of go back to, it's like a mix of physicality and nature. Like I want to kayak the Grand Canyon.
Mm.
The Colorado River kind of goes through into the Grand Canyon and you can do excursions through that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be the coolest thing in the world. Looking up thousands of feet into this thing that took millions of years to carve out through erosion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insane. It's that perfect mix of like adventure and physicality and nature.
Mm-hmm.
And all that.
Oh, I want to hike the Appalachian.
Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
PCT. That's another one.
Yep. It's funny how you want to hike the PCT and I want to hike the Appalachian. It's like conjoining goals.
Yeah.
Similar, but different.
I'll do the Appalachian if you do the PCT.
Deal. You heard it here first, folks.
I want to ride motorcycles from Alaska, from Anchorage down to the tip of Chile.
Okay.
I think there's that one road. I don't know what road it is, but mm-hmm. it literally goes all the way down. That would be just a crazy adventure.
You would need a very specific motorcycle
mm-hmm.
and a few months.
Yeah. think
well, maybe not. Maybe just a couple months.
I think there's the same thing where you could do like the Great Wall of China. Obviously not ride a motorcycle on the Great Wall of China, but there's like roads adjacent so you can follow the path of the Great Wall of China and do like an adventure motorcycle riding trip.
Hmm.
That's kind of a thing too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know that. pretty cool, though.
Just some of those worldly adventures. Mm-hmm. Get under your belt.
Absolutely. Oh, man. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. But there's some crazy ones, too. There's a documentary actually coming out about a guy who just wanted to kind of travel the world. And in his travels, he said, like, the best friends he ever met was in Libya. And he formed these connections with all these people in Libya. And he, like, found himself in this little community. And then the civil war broke out in Libya. And he found himself an American citizen from a upper middle class background fighting, never in the military before, fighting in the Libyan Revolution because he brought these ties.
Wow.
So those global travels, they can create things that you never expected. And mm-hmm. you can find things in yourself that you never would have expected.
Yeah. Like an example for me was traveling to Singapore and New Zealand and Australia and all these other places. It made me think, because normally, or a lot of people, at least in the United States, they'll think like, oh, what city in my home state am I going to call home? And then some people travel more and like, all right, well, what state am I going to call home? Mm-hmm. And then now I've been to New Zealand. I'm like, oh crap. Like what country am I going to call home? Cause New Zealand, it's awesome. Like the people are incredible. The culture is incredible, all that stuff. And I legitimately thought just up and moving to New Zealand, just cause it seems like that great. And some people are like, oh, well, you want to leave America and F you, blah. But if you travel to these other countries and you see how incredible all these other places also are, it's like you keep adding menu items to a restaurant menu and you're trying to order dinner.
Yeah. And it's not to say, because I feel the same way. America is an amazing place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, as much as we criticize certain things or say certain things about policy, this, that, with the other, America is still one of the greatest places on the entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting to the age now with how information is so viable and it's so easy to travel anywhere you want that people are finding out that, yeah, America's amazing, but there are so many other countries that are also super amazing. And they're different, but there's no mutual exclusiveness that because America is the greatest country in the world, that no other country can also be amazing.
Yeah.
So you're finding out that, and again, that kind of goes to the growing experience. Living in a different culture transforms you.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Oh, yeah.
So being able to live there and, you know, maybe one day raise kids there and have your kids have that experience, I think that would be a pretty incredible thing to do.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's where my desire to get rid of things came from, is essentially the less stuff you have, the easier it is to move. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Financial freedom is definitely on that list.
Mm-hmm.
To live debt-free, just to not have that burden, that's definitely on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Which some people, you know, work their whole life to achieve.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. All right. I think that's about time for the weekly.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Uh-huh. So I kind of want to jump in here.
Sure.
While we're talking about agriculture, because we brought up kind of the aeroponic hydroponics.
Jump before. Right in.
So I got this thing for Christmas called a click and grow.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more.
So it's a little reservoir terrarium, and connected to this reservoir is a UV light. That's about a foot taller than the reservoir. And then there's these little circular things. So you buy these pods, and in the pods, there's already soil and seeds, and you just click them in. So when you click them into the little circular spot, it goes, the roots touch the reservoir, essentially. So as long as you have the reservoir full or mostly full, you never have to water the plant. It has a little tip at the end that soaks up the moisture and gives the plant the exact amount of water it needs. And then you plug in the UV light, and the UV light has a cycle of 16 hours on, 8 hours off.
Mm-hmm.
So you essentially plug it in when you're about to go to sleep. And so, or you time it so that you plug it in when you wake up in the morning. Because then the UV light is on for 16 hours, and then it automatically shuts off when you go to bed. So it's this self-sustaining thing where you don't have to water the plant. Every 3 months you have to put water in that little tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then you never have to worry about putting the plant in sunlight, so you can grow it in the corner of your dark apartment if you want to. All the nutrients are in the soil. There's no fertilizers, no pesticides, herbicides, none of that stuff. So it's very organic, non-genetically modified seeds, stuff like that. and the plants grow like crazy. I mean, it's been like 2 weeks, and I already have just full-on 3 grown basil plants.
Jeez.
Just full. Like, I have a plastic Ziploc bag in the fridge just full of basil leaves,
mm-hmm.
because this thing is just growing. So that's, and they have big farms too. They're definitely more pricey, but where you can grow, you know, 40, 50, 60 plants in these things. So you could have your own little farm of lettuce, and there's strawberries, tomatoes, all these different things that you can, pods that they have the season.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to look into that actually.
Yeah. Click and grow.
Awesome. Do you know if you can order those online?
You can. Yeah. I think it's only online. I don't know if they have brick and mortar stores. But it was on like Oprah's list for favorite things this Christmas or whatever.
Oprah's favorite things.
You get a click and grow. You get a click and grow. Everybody gets a click and grow. Yeah.
But yeah, I can't rave about it enough. It is seriously awesome. And the basil tastes amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, it is the freshest stuff right there. So yeah, you could have your own garden no matter where you are. The mm-hmm. thing's portable. It's super light. Even if you get a bigger one, I mean, once you drain out the water, it's just plastic parts. That's mm-hmm. it. And the energy consumption is fairly low, so.
That's awesome. I'll have to look into like a cilantro one.
Or
a mint leaf one, because I seem to just go through those two particular things mm-hmm. at a rapid clip.
And it's a live plant too, right? It's a plant in soil that's mm-hmm. attached to water. So the plant continually grows. So, you know, I don't know how long it's going to last. It might last 6 months, a year, whatever. But think about for like people who cook regularly and buy herbs. Before this, I'd probably buy basil like once a week in the mm-hmm. little package. And it's, you know, I've tried potting the little plant and you grow it outside and it might last a month and then something happens or there's not enough light or you water it too much and it dies.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about with this. So you're saving quite a bit of money too. You know, the 2 weeks of not buying basil, that's already $4.
Yeah.
That I've saved.
Yeah. Same thing with cilantro.
Yeah, cilantro. So if you did it with a bunch of herbs, you could be saving yourself a pretty little penny over time.
Yeah, man. I'm going to look into this probably right after the show.
All organic, too. Uh-huh. So do you care about that?
Oh, man. Because my problem with cilantro is you buy cilantro, right? And it's like the huge, big bundle of stuff. And I'll usually end up using about half and then... over the course of however long, and then the remaining half is bad.
Oh, but it gets slimy so quick. It
gets so slimy, and so I'll just end up having to toss it and buy a whole nother one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could just clip off the top half of like a cilantro bunch,
boom.
Perfect, done. And then it just grows back. Oh, yeah.
Same with lettuce, too. Lettuce gets slimy relatively quick.
Mm-hmm.
It goes mm-hmm. bad. Certain leafy vegetables do, whereas if you could just chop off, I want a little salad today, chop off a little lettuce head, a few... spritzers of, you know, spinach leaves.
Oh, yeah. Bit of sprigs of rosemary or whatever. Mm. Oh, man.
And that's why when we talk about kind of like the solution to agriculture long term is a lot of people locally growing things, right? Getting back mm-hmm. to local farms, hydroponics and warehouses in every city and stuff like that. That could be a big part too. You could grow, you know, all you need is a little soil, little seeds, or buy their pods.
Mm-hmm.
You grow it all in your house.
And this is going This might take the conversation to a whole new turn, but if you can sustainably grow stuff like that, right, in its own little encapsulated thing, right, you can then take that whatever growing system, put it on a spaceship, and then now whatever plants and food that you were sustaining yourself with here on Earth, you could also sustain yourself with in a spaceship.
Yep.
Boom.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bam.
Especially
food security.
Yeah. If there is some sort of sustainably grown or not sustainably grown, systematically grown and like a click and grow like bean or something like that.
A lentil.
A lentil. The god bean.
Well, you saw NASA they grew like the first few heads of red lettuce in space.
Really?
So I guess there's the gravity issue.
Mm-hmm.
That affects the soil and the seeds and stuff like that. But they found a way to get around the gravity issue. And yeah, now they can grow fresh vegetables.
Ooh,
pretty awesome.
I wonder if you could combine like aquaponics with like pressure cookers to simulate gravity.
Do not try this at home. My God, this could go wrong in so many different ways. But yes, for
man scientists. Loses life growing head of lettuce. News at 11.
Oh God! And he got the idea from Breakfast at Timothy's.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the possibilities are huge.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, with that, it has been another delightful episode.
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast at Timothy's.
Go get yourself a Click and Grow and then write us a review on iTunes.
Yeah. Or just share an episode with somebody that you think would enjoy it.
Someone you care about.
Yeah.